The Roswell Legacy continues with Jesse Marcel Jr., Stanton Friedman on Coast to Coast AM. Stanton, you and Jesse, you were talking about the material that Jesse Marcel was looking at. I'd let you, Stan, pick it up from there.
Well, he described it to me as being stuff he had never seen before, and he was familiar with rockets and all these other things. And I hear people saying that, this is all made up, it's a fictional account. Be wary of the noisy negativists is all I can say. Jesse was familiar with airplanes and, rivets and wires and the other things you find on airplanes and little tags that say made in Oshkosh and stuff like that. The same goes for Jesse Jr. Now, he's flown airplanes. And so the material was quite extraordinary. It wasn't just standard stuff that we have today. The memory medal, Jesse in our first conversation told how one of his people took a hunk of metal that was there and put one end on a rock and the other end on the ground and hit it with a sledgehammer and didn't make a dent in it. And it was extraordinarily lightweight. It would have been nice if we had that kind of stuff. We still don't have it for building airplanes out.
No, not at all. When your father brought the material home, Jesse,
yes.
How did he do it? Was it in a box, a crate, or did he just bring it in?
It's in cardboard boxes, and this was in the backseat of our 1942 Buick, and they had brought it in the house and just spread the stuff out on the floor. As a matter of fact, the box wasn't entirely empty. There's still some debris inside of it, but I think he just took the representative portions out and spread out there so we could take a look at it and see what this was. But Stan's right. This did not come from any kind of known aircraft that I've ever seen, and I'm sure my dad either. And
we need to stress here that one of the reasons that Jesse and Sheridan Cabot went out there is because the rancher let them know that there was loads of stuff out there. He only brought in a little to town in his small pickup truck. And I mention this because some of the terrible documentaries of the last several months make it look like there was just a little pile of stuff in area 20 feet square. Even the cover-up article on July 9th said it covered an area 200 yards in diameter. And that ain't no mogul balloon, man.
No, not at all. And was the farmer, Brazel, was he cooperative?
Well, he was. The kicker was here. He'd found this stuff. The ranch was out in the middle of nowhere. There's no road there. And he had shown the neighbors, and he went into town on Saturday the 5th, into the town of Corona to do his standard shopping. Now, remember, he didn't have a telephone. He didn't have electricity. He didn't get a newspaper. He hadn't heard about flying saucers. But when he was at the Wade's General Store in Corona, that's when he heard about those things. And also there have been articles that those people had seen about there was a reward for flying saucers. And they suggested he go into the sheriff in Roswell, see if he could collect the reward. I've got the article. It was a couple thousand bucks, which is a lot of money back then. And so he was cooperative. He went to the sheriff's office. The sheriff called the base, talked to Jesse. Jesse came out and looked at this weird stuff. And the reason Colonel Blanchard told Jesse to go out there, they had to follow the rancher out there, he and Cabot in their separate vehicles, because there's no way, they didn't have GPS back then. There's no way to say, here are the coordinates to see what you can see. They had to follow him out there, much of it cross country, to get to the stuff. So he was cooperative. He gave them a can of beans, Jesse told me that in our first conversation. They stayed overnight in their sleeping bag. He took them to the debris field the next day. And Jesse's pondering this whole scene. They came back, and would you know that the government went out and grabbed the rancher and brought him back while Jesse was off to Fort Worth, Texas? They kept the rancher and fed him a new story about dates and what the stuff was like. And the Air Force mentions part of that story in their two terrible reports, but they don't give the straight scoop about anything. It was a sad tale of government cover-up.
Do we know, Jesse, how many trucks showed up to take the debris away? Did your dad ever mention that?
No, he didn't mention the, you know, how much there was there. Although he did, like Stan was saying, cover a considerable area, and certainly was a lot more than the small representative part of the debris that he brought home. So there's a lot of it.
Is it possible he did see the aliens, but was so shocked, maybe so overcome, he didn't want to tell anybody, at least any of the family members?
Well, that's certainly possible. I know he was pretty closed-mouthed about this because he was very definite about not talking about it anymore. And it's certainly possible he could have seen something like that. But, again, he didn't mention it to me nor Stan. So, I just don't know.
Remember, Stan, he was a dutiful military officer who
yes.
was in intelligence work. Keeping your lips closed was an important part of that job.
Yes.
I'm very interested, Jesse, in the beam that you looked at when you were a child. Did it look like it was broken off, or did it look intact?
Well, I'm just trying to think about that. It was about 12 to 18 inches long, and it had like an I-beam configuration. And it was, I guess about 3/8 of an inch in cross-sectional diameter. I don't recall whether the ends were fractured or whether they were clean cut. I really just don't remember that.
Did it look like a handle if you had to try to put it into some kind of other object? What might it fit into?
Well, no, who knows where it came from, but it was a metallic beam and 12 to 18 inches long with the symbols written along the inner surface of this of the beam there, so... who knows what it was for? Yeah,
it could have held equipment in place.
Right, Jeff?
I'm sorry?
It was straight.
Yes. Oh, yes, it was straight. It was not bent or damaged.
And just with the inscriptions, didn't have screw holes in it or anything like that?
No. They were solid figures, and I do recall one distinctly because I could attach it to a familiar object. There was a ball over a truncated pyramid, and I remember that because it looked like a seal balancing a ball on its nose.
Now, that's incredible. A ball.
These are in the book, right, Jeff?
Yep.
Yes, it is in the book.
A ball over a truncated pyramid.
Yes.
And, I don't know. Maybe we're going to find out who built the pyramid, Stan, once and for all.
Why not?
It could have said something like, do not flush in zero gravity, for all I knew, but who knows?
How long did you stay in Roswell, Jesse? Forever, right?
Well, we moved back to Washington, D.C. My dad was stationed in Washington, not at the Pentagon, but at an office in town there in 1948 or 49, somewhere in that time frame.
Did you ever go back?
No, not in that time frame.
All right. It was Walter Haupt, Stan, who went back and lived there, right?
Well, he never left.
He never left, okay.
No, he got out of the service. His wife had a baby that year. They loved it in Roswell. He was from Chicago. Maybe you can understand that.
Sure.
I shouldn't say that. But Walter was a pillar of the community, and I want to stress that because, again, the attacks have been made, personal attacks on everybody involved in this case by the noisy negativists. Rule number 3 for debunkers is if you can't attack the data, attack the people. And that's been going on. And Jess Jr. wore a flak jacket in Iraq. He's going to need that as he talks about the book. Slings and arrows of outraged debunkers,
I tell you, it's a very interesting story.
When your father died in 1986, was there a deathbed confession? Was there anything more that he told you, Jesse?
I called him dutifully every Saturday, and shortly before he died, he had gone out back to Roswell at the behest of one of the TV stations in New Orleans to do a program, and they filmed him out there walking across the field. And I asked him on the when I called him, I said, "Well, was there jokingly, of course, was there any of it left?" And his words were, "No, they vacuumed the place up." Those were his exact words: "Vacuumed the place up."
Vacuumed the place up.
That's a comment I heard, too.
And, matter of fact, I have it on a tape. He recorded the conversation, and I found that tape, and it's somewhere in the files here, but I have that conversation.
Did he ever put anything down in writing?
I don't think so. He does have a diary, but I looked through that, and it didn't really disclose anything that I didn't already know.
But did he talk about the crash, though?
Yeah, not in the diary, no.
Not in the diary.
That was a taboo subject. we were not to discuss it or even write about it, I guess.
Yeah, he was given orders, Stan. Something really happened there.
Well, no question about that. And again, you have to look at the military in 1947. We just won a huge war. Here's the only atomic bombing group in the entire world. Part of Jess Sr.'s job was to brief pilots when they went out on simulated missions in the B-29s that were there. Not many people were involved with nuclear weapons. And maybe it's ironic, maybe it's appropriate, that the same outfit that dropped the bombs on Japan winds up with the wreckage of an alien spacecraft that might be running around because of those bombs.
That's possible, sure.
Jesse, let's get your take on what you now, after all these years, in your head, what do you now believe happened out there?
Well, I believe, as advertised, I think it was a crash of an extraterrestrial craft, because I can't tie it in with anything familiar. And, you know, the material is such an unusual character that, again, I've never seen anything like it before. But I realize that the immense possibilities of life elsewhere are just all over. You know, like the Hubble telescope is getting pictures of other planetary systems. We're actually looking at multiple planetary systems. And some of these may very well be Earth-like and with their civilization. So I recognize the possibility of extraterrestrial flight, because they're obviously smarter than we are, because they get here from wherever they come from.
Stan, this visitation, if that's what happened during this time period, you know, the atomic age, we were really kicking up. We had already dropped the bomb 2 years earlier, two of them. Might have been probably there. They probably have some kind of sensors out there, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I think my basic rule is that any civilization is concerned about its own survival and security, which means keeping tabs on the primitives in the neighborhood, but only close tabs on those primitives who show signs of being able to bother you. Now, if you look at technological output from our society, once we started having blast furnaces and all kinds of other things that are putting out in data, you could call it pollution, and then radio and all that stuff, suddenly it was clear this society was moving rapidly. And then you got World War II, where you've got not only nuclear weapons toward the end of it, but before that you've got the rockets, V-1s, V-2s. Interestingly enough, they were being tested in New Mexico in 1947 over at White Sands. So there's two of the three signs that these idiot Earthlings were getting ready to leave. The third, incidentally, was advanced electronics, radar. And White Sands had some of the best radar around to track the rockets, which often didn't go where they were supposed to go. Some even wound up down in Mexico, to the consternation of the Mexicans, incidentally. So, you know, it's not surprising that they would be here on this planet at this time as we started to move forward to where we could move out there. Look, I worked on fusion propulsion systems. 10 million times as much energy per particle kicked yep. out the back end as in a chemical rocket. That was 40-some years ago. So on a small time on a galactic scale, say 100 years from then, they would expect that Earthlings would be moving out. If you were an alien, would you want us out there? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think
not the capacity.
Yeah, they have more to fear from us than we from them. And just look around. Look at all our wars, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan and the Middle East. You know, just all we do is fight. You know, so no wonder they're scared of us.
I mean, I'd rather have a guy trained in weaponry holding a pistol than a 10-year-old kid, for example.
Right.
And, you know, you look at that and go, oh, my God, he could shoot someone, he could shoot himself. And maybe that's the same analogy with this, Stan.
Well, yeah, that doesn't bother me. A primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare. That's how I've described us. So I'm not saying these are good guys who are here to help us or anything like that. They're obviously not here to immediately destroy us because we're still here. But, you know, we killed 50 million of our own kind during World War II.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't forget that number. We destroyed 1,700 cities. If it happened once, it could happen again. Except now, the